And now we're going to talk about a collision of new technology and old, by which I mean Amazon and the rest of the book industry. The company's maintained a publishing arm for the past 2 years, but it's really ramped up this summer. This week, the company announced that it had signed best-selling self-help author Timothy Ferris to its publishing division. And now most industry watchers expect more big-name authors to follow Ferris to Amazon. We asked Michael Schatzkin, who heads the Idealogical Company, a publishing industry consulting firm, whether traditional publishers should fear the 900-pound gorilla that is entering their midst.
The most important thing that publishers have done historically is going to be relegated to a place of much less importance. What we're seeing with Amazon is a sign of that.
So the folks at Random House should be shaking in their boots?
I think the folks at Random House, Simon & Schuster, Macmillan, HarperCollins, those publishers, I don't know if they're shaking in their boots, but they're certainly aware that the ground is shifting dramatically underneath them.
So talk about Amazon entering the publishing biz in this context. What's it got going for it, and does it have anything going against it?
Yes, it does have some things going against it. What it has going for it is direct customer contact to the millions and millions and millions of people that buy directly at Amazon.com. What Amazon's weakness is they don't have the customers that Barnes & Noble has, and they don't have the ability to put books into stores and on shelves. So the good news for Amazon is that what they're weak at is getting smaller, and what they're strong at is getting bigger. But we're still in a time when selling books in stores is important.
Why can't an Amazon imprint right now send a salesperson to Barnes & Noble and get the books into stores?
Well, the first problem is Barnes & Noble, because Amazon's desire in signing up authors directly is to monopolize the e-books for the Kindle platform. And Barnes & Noble made very clear earlier this week that the only way that they would consider buying an Amazon book to put on their shelves would be if Amazon also made that book available for them to sell as an e-book through their Nook platform. Amazon has never made any Sherman statement about what they would or wouldn't do.
Did you say a Sherman statement?
Yeah, that's when Sherman said in the 1880s that he would absolutely not run for president.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I mean as a defining, clear, unambiguous statement. They have not made a defining, clear, unambiguous statement that they will only sign up books for the Kindle platform and won't allow them outside. But I am not aware of any case in which Amazon's done that. So Barnes & Noble has said, yeah, well, we might stock your books, but only if you're going to make the books available through the Nook platform. And I don't think it's Amazon's intention to make the books available through the Nook platform. So scratch Barnes & Noble. The independent stores, who are also angry at Amazon, I mean, because among other things, we have a battle going on about sales taxes, and all the independent stores are paying sales taxes, and Amazon avoids sales taxes. Also, the independent stores are using Google eBooks. And of course, Amazon, if they're monopolizing for the Kindle, aren't going to make their eBooks available through Google eBooks. So the independent stores don't want to stock anything from Amazon. And that leaves you with the mass merchants, Walmart, Target, Kmart, stores like that. They ain't Amazon's best friend either. They're competing with Amazon as well. And those stores don't stock a lot of titles. So whether any particular Amazon title would make the cut would be an open question. Not all the Random House and Macmillan books make the cut.
For this story, we asked Amazon to furnish somebody to interview. They wouldn't do it. Why do you think they're holding their cards so close to the chest?
I think it's really the software business mentality versus the book business mentality. Amazon and Apple, and I must say, much less so Google, but Amazon and Apple reveal what they want to reveal when they decide that it's time to reveal it. That is their corporate style. I don't think it's likely to change anytime soon, and it certainly is frustrating for those of us who are in the publishing business and are really used to a lot of conversation about what we're doing from all sides of the value chain.
Speaking of Apple, there's this price-fixing accusation floating around. Could you summarize what that is and how it fits into this question of publishing in the future?
Well, it's not simple. The way books are sold is that the publisher actually sells the book to a store. The store has the right to return it. And then the store, having bought the book from the publisher, can set the price anywhere it wants to the consumer. And that's the way the ebook business worked. So the publisher would say, this ebook is $30. I'm going to sell it to you for $15. It's up to the store to decide what they want to charge. Then Amazon decided, well, when they bought the book for $15, I think we'll charge $10. And the reason that they did that is they were trying to get people to buy Kindles, because once they bought Kindles, they would be locked into buying their books from Amazon. Publishers had two problems with this. One is that they could see Amazon moving to a monopoly on ebooks. But the other one is that they were undercutting the value of the print book, right? The $30 book was now being sold for $10 as an ebook. Publishers were upset with this because it made the migration from print to electronic, from store to online, move faster, which undercut their power. So in January 2010, Apple came on the scene and said, we're going to open a bookstore, but the way we want to work is what we call agency. You're not going to sell us the book. You're going to sell the customer the book. And we're just going to broker the relationship between you and the customer. You're going to set the price. But you got to set the same price everywhere. We can't have you setting a price for us and then have somebody else selling it for less. That was called agency. Five of the six major publishers immediately signed up for agency. And Amazon, after making a brief attempt to stop agency and threaten to boycott those books, withdrew that idea, agreed to agency, and agreed to a plan by which the price were set by the publishers. So the accusation, initially launched by a law firm in Seattle, I don't know if that's a coincidence or not, but a law firm in Seattle sued Apple and those five publishers saying you're fixing prices and alleging collusion.
But Mike, correct me here, but if a bunch of publishers get together with a bunch of vendors and they agree to set a price floor that the vendors cannot adjust, that sounds to me like the definition of fixing a price.
The person who's selling the product fixes the price.
They can't fix the price for Barnes & Noble then.
No, Barnes & Noble isn't selling the product. The publisher is. The publisher is accepting the sales tax liability. The publisher is accepting all the responsibility of the end seller. And therefore, the publisher is setting the price for that book, not for anybody else's book, just for their own book. And they're saying that that price will be the same at all points of purchase and that retailers have to compete on something other than price. I don't know the law. It may be price fixing. But I know the commercial impact, and the commercial impact is that Amazon was on its way to a monopoly. And because of the agency pricing scheme, we now have a healthy Barnes & Noble ebook business. We have Google and Kobo and Apple. We have a multi-retailer ebook business, and Amazon's ebook monopoly is nothing like what it looked like it was going to be 2 or 3 years ago, which I think is good for the industry and ultimately good for the consumer.
Mike, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Mike Schatzkin is the CEO of The Ideological Company.